Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are on this Gooner planet. What can I say apart from virtual hug to every Gooner on the planet? Don't I really know what to even start this podcast. Thank you for joining us because our Sunday night podcast is coming tonight. There'll be no pod this weekend. So joining me, unfortunately, Chris couldn't make it tonight. So back in the hot seat is my right-hand man, Cookie, Mr. Captain Cook. How are you, my lovely?
Been better. I wasn't sure how to respond because I knew you were going to ask that. But no, I'm okay. I've accepted what's happened. I've swallowed that bitter pill. And yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting it through with you guys tonight.
Okay. So I'd like to welcome back. It's such a shame. It's a miserable chat hour, isn't it? Alan Algar, welcome back. Good friend of mine, Alan Algar, welcome to the show.
It's great to be back. Not in these circumstances, as you say, but I'm hoping, like Cookie, this will be a good process and might give us a smile by the end of it.
Go on, Cookie, smile.
Okay, I'll do the job.
Right, we're going to say hello to a few people in the chat room. Phil Macker, hello, Team PG, big hugs all. Cookie, look at this from Skills. Cookie is a good host.
Well, it's not me hosting tonight, Skills.
It's not. Sorry, mate.
It's Amanda, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. What do you mean, unfortunately?
I couldn't host tonight's one. It's too much.
He couldn't host. I had to do it. Mummy of the pod had to do it. Cookie will be doing next week's. Lynn says, hi, Cookie and Alan. Klopp double.
God.
Have you ever had that before, Al?
No, I've had some shockers down the years. That isn't too bad. I can list three or four others that are far worse than that.
A young version for sure. Carl Stark, so. Hey Amanda, Cookie and Alan. Hey Carl.
Hey Carl. And
William Jack, evening Gooners. Thank you to everyone. Right, everybody in the chat room, we're going to dissect last night and there's a few other bits to talk about as well. We would love your questions, but if you can just hold off for the first part of the show so I don't miss any, that would be fantastic. But I'll try and bring questions as we go and things like that. It's not been easy today. I'm sure all of us who have been working are working with Tottenham fans, West Ham fans, Liverpool fans, United fans, whatever. It's not been easy. From the minute I stepped into the coffee shop this morning with two West Ham fans sitting next to me talking about Arsenal, who don't know me, and I had to interject and say, I'm really sorry, but yeah, maybe you did all right against us at Upton Park. Look at me, I still say Upton Park, the London Stadium. However, you'd have only wished to have had a season like ours. And they looked at me like I was mad. Number one. I've had it all day from different people. And I want to get into this rival fan thing, Cookie, in a minute. I don't get it, and I want people to explain to me. If Tottenham were going for the league and they'd lost at City and they had beaten, say, Liverpool, Man United, City, I would be devastated this morning and absolutely petrified they were going to win the league. I don't even want them to win a throw-in, let alone the league. But yet you've got Liverpool and United fans on social media. And I've got Man United fans as well, personally, to me. We're over the moon, we lost. So I'm going to get into that later, boys. But first of all, Cookie, this wasn't actually the match you were actually that worried about. It's Newcastle that you have been going on and on about. However, talk me through the first, say, how did you feel yesterday when the team came out, and then we'll get into the game later.
I think I wasn't worried about this game because I hate to say it, I just saw it coming. I really don't want to sound like an absolute pessimist, because I know going into the game there was so much optimism surrounding it despite the recent poor results. And I think, you know, had we gone into this game on the back of winning at Anfield, winning at West Ham, we should have beaten Southampton at home, bottom of the league against top league. You've got to win that game. It could have been a different story, and it could have made a result like last night a bit more palatable. But I still think, given the way they played, the way they performed, even if we did have a better points advantage, I still think, irrespective of what happened prior to this game, they're still going to go on to win the league. I think they're that much of a machine. And given that we've got that game away at Newcastle, and we've got tough games to come as well. You know, Forest had a great win last night. We've got to go there. Got to play Brighton at home. It's a sticky fixture for us. So nothing was going to be given if we'd have won those games before going into this one. But the thing that really hurt me about last night was that it was so grimly predictable. I wanted to see something completely different from Arsenal. And when I saw that team lineup that was the same as it has been the past couple of games, bar Xhaka that came in for Fabio Vieira, of course, I was just like, well, you've not really tweaked it. You've not really looked at the opposition too much and kind of adjusted our game. And I get it, you know, it's a system that's worked so well, but in recent weeks, it's kind of been to our detriment with, you know, Rob Holding being in the team. I don't want to scapegoat him or analyse him too heavily because he's on everyone's lips at the minute. But the fact of the matter is, we don't play as well with him in the team. And that's been a real problem for us recently. But yeah, it was...
Let me just stop you there, Cookie, because I'm going to ask you this question now then, from Carl. Should Arteta have devised a clever change of tactics for the match? Pep change formation to combat our standard formation? This has been sort of mooted all day long. So I'm going to get your opinion on that, and then I'm going to bring Al in.
So I think this is what separates Pep from Arteta at the moment, is that he's not too afraid to tweak the system based on who he's coming up against. And it's something that we've cried out for a long time. And I do completely understand that Arteta has built this philosophy, this way of playing, and it's worked so well when everyone is fit. If Saliba's fit, I wouldn't have a problem with the team that he played yesterday, you know, because he makes such a massive influence to the way we play. And I think we might have seen a different result with him in the team. Not saying it's guaranteed, but we might have seen it. But when you've got a player like Rob Holding, you've kind of got to adjust the way you play, especially when you're coming up against, let's be real, the best team in the world at the minute. I can't think of a team that is actually better than them at the moment. So I would have liked to have seen him either play a double pivot in midfield. I think we got more control of the game when Jorginho came on, albeit we were 3-0 down, so you can't read into that too much. But maybe a Jorginho-Partey pivot or a Xhaka-Partey pivot. Failing that, I know it's a bit extreme, but changing the formation, going to three at the back, you could have had Tierney at left centre-back, Gabriel in the middle, White at right centre-back. And then obviously you've got a bit of a tricky scenario where you play either Nelson or Saka at right wing-back, which isn't ideal. You want them to be higher up the pitch. But you've got to look at the opposition, and at this stage in the season, you can't just chuck in someone like Rob Holding and hope for the best away at the Etihad. I'm sorry, okay, but it's just not at the level.
He wasn't the only bad player last night. So I want to, because you keep saying Rob Holding, and I get that. I do get that. But let me just ask Al the question that Carl has just said, because I have to be honest, when I left the Emirates on Friday night, as we walked out, Carl said to me, we should play a double pivot at Man City. That was Friday night. And I'm like, what do you mean by that? And he was like, well, we need to double pivot there because we've got to stop them somehow. And he has been going on about that. And then obviously a lot of people started to say that. So do you think we should have gone down the road that Cookie may have agreed with or not?
I do, but I mean, this will seem like it's in hindsight, and I was like Carl saying this, you know, a few days ago. We knew that a win was almost vital to get back on track after losing, drawing against Southampton. But the problem that we had was the fact that I think it's very hard to go to Etihad and play for a draw, and it was very unlikely we were going to get a win there. But that change of tactics could have either come before the game, but certainly should have come within 10 minutes of what we'd seen on the pitch. We weren't getting the ball. We were second best to everything because we were so unbalanced. And there's lots of little things, and they all have knock-on effects. Gabriel has to babysit Holding, which means that he's always out of position when he's obviously trying to babysit Holding because Saliba's not there. White and Zinchenko weren't able to do their usual overlap or return pass with Saka and Martinelli, which meant that every time Saka and Martinelli got the ball, instead of having a player either 10 yards behind them or 10 yards running past them, they didn't have that at all. So they had to pass inwards to Ødegaard and whoever else had managed to join the attack. And every time that happened, it meant that we were overloaded in exactly the wrong areas of the pitch. And the ball went over the top. And Partey stays back. But Partey staying back with Gabriel and Holding with, as I say, one of them babysitting Holding. It means that that three as a triangle just doesn't work. And you'll see most of City's good attacks came from just making that three have the ball. It didn't even matter if they had the ball or not. They just got the ball in that area and knew that somebody wouldn't be able to retain the ball, wouldn't be able to hold on to the ball, and would have no help from anywhere else in the team. So nearly every section of the match was played out with City overrunning us in every single area because we were so unbalanced. Now, what I'd have liked to have happened after the first 10 minutes, after the first goal, was probably what I'd like to have seen at kickoff, and that is a very, very slow approach to the game and a very considered approach to the game. And to me, it was very passive, just chucking out our sort of almost first choice, very obvious first 11. Pep didn't have to do much to actually counter or even double think what was actually going to be going on. I mean, I'm pretty sure he got the team sheet and said, well, Xhaka's fit. That's the only change that I'd have expected if he was. And otherwise, they're exactly as I expected. That's given him a long lead-in time to actually work out what he's going to do. So Arteta should have posed him a question. And if that's posing him a question by going defensive for the first 30 minutes while we get our feet, or it's trying to get on the front foot against them, just one of those things. To not do anything was the problem for me.
Okay, so let's just go back to the beginning. it's really interesting, isn't it? I was quite positive on our podcast, but probably because James and Chris weren't. But I was thinking, if we got a draw, I've been there so many times when we've lost. And I'll say it again, and I truly believe this, Al, and I don't know if you've heard me say this, but I've got a lot of City friends, all different, not one group, who go to the Etihad and follow them home and away. And one of them said to me, we thank our lucky stars those allegations were thrown at us because we weren't playing that well up to then. The minute that was thrown at them, mm-hmm. it was like, right, come and get us. It is the world against us. And yeah. they've not lost since then. I know people disagree with me. But even a City fan said that to me. He said, the worst thing that ever happened to you was that, because then we got a fire in our bellies and we haven't stopped. He even said his team weren't that good leading up to that. And I remember thinking yesterday, I all of a sudden in the afternoon went completely calm. I just went calm, where for Liverpool, it was excruciating that game. It was the worst game I've watched in years. I really struggled. So I had this feeling, I thought, we're not going to win it. We're not. We've just got to do our best. I just hope, and I was saying to Cookie during the game, I hope it's not 6 or 7. But I truly, truly believe, and it is funny because April we haven't won a game, but we've only lost one game and drawn three. It feels like we've lost every week. We've been 2-0 up in three games. Southampton, we weren't 2-0 up, but West Ham, Liverpool, 2-0 up and we've lost to Leeds. We've got Southampton. You can't legislate for Aaron Ramsdale throwing the ball out and them scoring in 27 seconds. I went to that match convinced we were going to win. But we haven't actually played well since Liverpool came back. I don't know if it shocked them, Cooks. I don't know what's happened. But we go into this game, we're 5 points clear, and everybody, we still are top of the league with 2 points clear. And the pundits, everyone's very pro-City, and I don't really get it, if I'm honest. But I just got this feeling when they walked out, Cooks, they just didn't look up for it. They may have been scared, which is totally understandable. You're going up against De Bruyne and Haaland, Mahrez, Grealish. They're all on fire at the moment. Everybody's on fire. And I just sat there and I thought, we haven't got the beating of this team. We just haven't. And then I felt Aaron Ramsdale was at fault with their first goal. Would you agree with me? Do you think he should have done better? Or do you think it was just a great shot?
It was a collective thing, to be honest. I do think at his near post, he should be saving that. But again, like, he made some unbelievable saves. If it wasn't for him, this could have been, you know, a cricket score. It could have easily been double digits. They had that many chances. 4-1 is actually quite flattering on our behalf. And the fact that we only just conceded the second before half-time, I mean, we were fortunate to go in at the break at 2-0 because they had so many more opportunities. I'm amazed that it was just that. I don't know if it's a case of the team not being up for it. I don't want to even think about that because, you know, we've come so far, and to throw it away like this is really frustrating. I think it was more nerves and inexperience more than anything. Obviously, we've got a really young team, and that plays a part when you're coming up.
Sorry, let me just reiterate. I don't mean like they weren't.
No, I know what you mean.
They looked nervous when they came out, and I wanted them to be warriors, and maybe they will win in the next couple of seasons. But not that they weren't up for it. Of course they were, but remember, they were coming off a three-game run where they hadn't won and they were playing terrible football. They were playing terribly. It was not good, was it? But anyway, go on.
Yeah, I think if we'd have gone into this game on the back of, you know, beating Southampton, beating West Ham, forget the Liverpool result for a minute, but I think that's kind of been our downfall since that second half at Anfield. I mean, well, even periods of the first half. Since that game's happened, we've just not looked ourselves. I mean, even in the West Ham game, apart from 10 minutes, we looked really poor. We looked really poor for 80 minutes against Southampton. So I can't say I'm surprised by what I saw yesterday. As I said earlier, it's just annoying that it's so predictable. Had we got into this game on the back of winning those matches, it might have been different and it might have been a closer scoreline and we might have had more confidence and we might have felt a bit more galvanised to go and get the win. But yeah, I thought they looked nervous. I think they were really feeling the pressure. And when you're coming up against, you know, players in the absolute peak, like De Bruyne, who, you know, he's not a young man himself, to be honest. I mean, he's 31, soon to be 32, but he's an absolutely phenomenal footballer. And there's been a lot of debate this season about, you know, who's had the better season, Ødegaard or Kevin De Bruyne. Well, that's very firmly closed that debate because he is, as much as I love Ødegaard, you look at the two yesterday, there are levels to this and he is on another pedigree at the minute to Ødegaard. He really took that game by the scruff of the neck, as he did when we played them at the Emirates as well. And it's someone like him that's a real difference maker. So, yeah, a shame, but, you know, I could go on about it all day.
Just go back to the Ødegaard point. If you're going on last night, absolutely, he's levels above De Bruyne. You're going on a whole season, I'd have to disagree with you there. I think Ødegaard has been phenomenal all season. Now, that leads me, because I should have mentioned this at the beginning, to, if you want to go to my tweet with Alan's, is it the online Gooner,
Al? Yes.
If anyone's read it, can you just quickly read it now so we can discuss it? He talks about Jesus, he talks about Ødegaard, and then he talks about a little bit at the end about the season. If anyone's read it or wants to read it, it's in our tweet, because we want to get to that in a minute. The reason I said that is because of Ødegaard. I just want to... Okay, that's fine. But Alan, I want to get to something. Did you feel they looked ready and confident when they walked out on the pitch last night?
No, I don't think they did. There's always two ways to take that. If I see a team and they look calm, if you then see them play well, you automatically assume that that was because they were calm. But if they look like that and then they play badly, you can then level that they maybe weren't up for it or not pumped up enough. So I think sometimes you always sort of attach the result to what you've already seen. And I don't mean you. I mean, just as fans, we do that. The thing for me is that getting the points against West Ham and Southampton, and we're going to keep saying this, I'm sure we'll be saying this well into the summer, those two games were the really disappointing games. Now, if we'd have got the points against those two teams, as we should have done, you know, 2-0 up against West Ham, they've been poor all season. I've been watching them professionally. The Southampton game, that mistake, it happens after 27 seconds. There's still a long time to come back from that against another very poor team. Then we'd have been looking at yesterday's game as a freebie, a free hit. And going into it as a freebie and a free hit, you maybe do play the way we played yesterday. You just stick to what you've been doing all season and you hope that it clicks again. But we went into that game yesterday with a totally different scenario because we hadn't picked up the 4 points in those other games. And that was going to make it tight. And therefore, I wanted to see something different. I wanted to see something completely different. And I'm afraid we didn't. And there's lots of fault you can attach and lots of blame you can attach. But if you extract this and look at it as on balance over the season, you could start to pick at little things that have maybe been worked out and maybe we're not reacting. And that's more of a concern for me because it's not like the season ends today. There are 5 games left. We are still top. Something might happen to City. It looks extremely unlikely after what we saw last night. But I fear the Chelsea game. I fear the Newcastle game. I fear that teams have worked us out. I fear that teams have worked out the way that we interchange our midfield. I fear the way that they've worked out the way that we overlap the fullbacks. And I fear that we haven't now got a response for it. And that's a huge test of Arteta. I always say one thing about Arteta. You can have the in and outs debate. You can have the idiots saying, I mean, the ridiculous Arteta out after the Southampton game on TalkSport. I genuinely don't believe these people are proper fans, including the Liverpool and United fans that are cheering City on against us. These are internet fans. This is a new breed of fan. I've got no time for it whatsoever. So I'm not talking about those guys, but I'm talking about the people that said Arteta is a new manager. So the one thing that I would have excused him is that if you have a manager in his first job, he will make all of the first-timer mistakes at your club. So, he's been an assistant manager. He'll have ideas of things that have gone wrong and how they were rectified by Pep. But to be the actual person in charge for loads of different scenarios that can occur to you as a manager, we're saying go and be the first person to do that, you know, In your first role, you are going to experience all those things with Arsenal. And we trust you that even if you get it wrong the first time, you'll get it right the second time. And we have seen that progression with him. We've seen him come on as a manager. There's certain mistakes he used to make in the early seasons when he was with us that he doesn't make now. But this new test to have what people call a plan B or to react to making subs while it's going on the pitch or something's going against us on the pitch, that is another level of management. And he really, really needs to prove that he's got that. And he's going to be tested in that. He's really going to be tested on that in the next few weeks and hopefully months and years. Hopefully months and years.
I can't stand listening to TalkSport. I haven't listened to them for about 8, to 9 years now, when Adrian Durham used to do Daily Arsenal, it wound me up so much. In the end, I had to stop listening, and I have. I stopped listening. Now, that night, unfortunately, my cousin decides to turn on TalkSport. I said to him and Carl, turn it off. I can't listen. Can't listen. I heard that caller, and I tweeted about that caller. But even, I don't remember the two guys who were on Andy. It wasn't Andy Goldstein. It was two others. They even had a go at him for saying, Arteta out, are you mad?
Yeah, I think it was Jamie O'Hara.
Yes. Was it Jamie O'Hara? Yeah. And even...
O'Hara, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Even they were not Arsenal fans.
Yeah, but it's nonsense. It's nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. And like half the things you'll hear.
The new internet breed. I'll give you that. But the Man United fan that said it to me today is my age and not on the internet. And I asked him, I said, are you insane? You want City to win the league, so we don't. Explain it. And he said, we'll beat them in the FA Cup. They'll lose the league to you now. And honestly, you know when you're sitting there going, no, listen to me. They're going to win the treble. They are that good. It will be easy for them to play all these games. I cannot see them, as you know, Cookie, I've said this, losing a point. But we get to the stage, and I would like to just say something, because I'm going to forget this, about our away fans. City were quiet. Unbelievably, they're quiet. They score, yeah, a bit of noise and stuff like that. They go then quiet again. Where is the atmosphere? Our fans, I heard through the TV, and one of them, if Trev is still here, Trev goes home and away everywhere. I'm sorry, I'm not shouting. And I know you've got a hangover. But our lovely Hilsey goes absolutely everywhere. Did not stop singing and shouting. You got a team like Man City. I think it's absolutely embarrassing that we go to these clubs and our fans, who are absolutely incredible, our away fans, are out singing them, Cooks. Out singing them. They literally sit in their seats. A lot of them were on their phones. And they're like, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not going to talk about City fans. I've heard mixed reports. Like some people were saying the place was absolutely buzzing. Other people have said it's quiet. I mean, we're all going to have a biased opinion on that, aren't we? But in terms of our away fans, I mean, as they have been all season, they've been absolutely sensational. As have our home fans, by the way. They've been really, really good. The support in general has been fantastic. And to be 3-0 down and kind of, you know, resigned to the fact that the title was swinging in City's favour, you know, it felt like a done deal at that point. For those fans to still be in full voice, I mean, it's just a credit to them. And to make the best of that scenario, I mean, I'd go as far as saying best away support in the league. But again, you know, we've all got unconscious bias towards that, but there aren't many teams that would still be so behind their team in a scenario where they're 3-0 down. So no, massive credit to them.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
I was at West Ham away. I was not in corporate this year, funny enough. I was in row 7. And I was so excited. It was my first away game with our fans. But unfortunately, it wasn't great. The atmosphere wasn't great because we go 2-0 up and then obviously Thomas Partey gives the ball away. And I want to get to Thomas Partey. That's why I've come here. And the atmosphere sort of changed a little bit. It went a little bit toxic, I have to say, around me. But Alan, talk to me about Thomas Partey. If you can see the comments I'm going to put up. Fiona said Partey has been bad in the last few games. Matthew said maybe fasting and Eid has impacted Partey. Skill says Partey has been shocking. What happened to him? I'm not sure I think he's been shocking, but I did think that maybe the fasting that he's been doing for Ramadan, which is obviously over now, may have had an impact. What do you think on that? Or is it because Saliba's not playing?
Well, do you know what? I think there's another game where Partey had an absolute shocker, and it was Palace away last season. And I'm pretty sure that was during Ramadan as well.
Right.
So I'm not going to go down the wormhole of looking at religious festivals, but I do know that the Palace game was during that time as well, the previous year. So it's a fair shout. It is a fair shout because that was one of his absolute shockers from last season. And he ended up going off injured in that game, but prior to that, he'd been very poor in that game. The problem with Partey is that he has sometimes had unnecessary and over the top praise where effectively he, to give a Roy Keane line, he's just been doing his job. So if you are extending that praise when someone's just doing their job, you set a new expectation of exactly the same with what we've done with the team this season. You know, we're expecting, we'd have all loved top four, but now if they blow the title from being odds on, we're going to say it's a disappointment. Well, the levels with Partey since he's been at the club, certain matches where he performs how you'd expect a player at a top six club to perform in his position, when he's being overly praised for doing that, he will throw in the odd shocker. And he's one of these players that will be a 0 out of 10, 10 out of 10, and has no in between. And I've seen that with him. And whether that's the excuse or not, whether it's the time of year and due to his religion and what he has to do to comply with his religion, I'm not sure. But I don't think he's as good as the praise that's been levelled at him. So things like last night don't actually surprise me. And there's a number of players in our squad that have been overpraised that now people are surprised that they've somehow turned in the odd shocker. And I know you've teed up my Odegaard piece already, but just to give context on that, the Gooner asked me to write a three things. So every time we play a game, I come up with three subjects from that game. It's very hard when we lose a game like last night because you don't want to be negative. You don't want to point fingers, but I had to point some fingers in last night's, and I hope people take it in the way that it's meant. Partey isn't mentioned.
No.
So I'll let people read that, but I do mention Gabriel Jesus in my first point, and that's that Gabriel Jesus has played nearly 200 Premier League games. In all of those matches, he's only been in the starting lineup for the outsider in the game, the underdog, the team that's not expected to win, four times. Once for City away at Liverpool, three times for us. So in 196 of his games, he's in the side that should be the aggressors, should be the ones with most possession, should be the ones that don't need to rely on knockdowns, don't need to rely on long balls. Last night, he's only experiencing for the fourth time what it's like to be in a team that are not going to have all of the ball. are going to have to play long balls, are going to be under a press all over the pitch, let alone up top. So you're getting to see new sides of these players. And I think the Jesus thing last night, I would have actually dispensed with him and said, this isn't your game. This isn't your game at all. Get someone in there, young, fresh legs, play a false nine, play Martinelli as a nine, play three across the top up front without a striker, and actually then try and press as a collective with young, hungry legs and see where we go. Just do something different. Jesus is not suited to that. I mean, he's 5'9", you know, 5'10" max. He isn't going to respond to balls knocked up. You know, some underdog teams have gone to City not expecting a thing, but they'll blast a long ball up and have a big striker up there. Mm. He's not that man. And that's why, as Lynn says there, Jesus did nothing last night. No, I'm not surprised. That isn't his game. That is not his game at all.
Okay, so it's quite... Because we're coming back with the ins and outs. And so the first goal goes in, and I think we're all just sitting there going, okay, how many is this going to be? It was a lovely shot by De Bruyne. He is actually my favourite player from another team. He has been for a couple of seasons. I think he's incredible. Cook, we were saying, I don't know if it was you and I, but we need to get 1-0 to half time. We didn't manage it. I don't actually remember their second goal. Is this the one where Ben White put his foot out and he's offside? Is this the one? Because I've lost. Right.
Yeah, that's
it. It's really strange with VAR at the moment because it depends where you draw a line, what angle you're looking at. There were angles.
At
one angle, I was like, yeah, Ben White's playing him onside. Absolutely. But when I've watched it again, Cooks, it looks like he's offside. So what was your take on that?
When they first showed it on BT Sport, it looked like clear as day. It looked like it was clearly offside, and it was kind of done at an angle. But then they showed another one, and yeah, that one looked like he was just by a toenail, just kept onside. But then there's been all these other replays of Ben White being pushed into an area.
Lynn just said that.
To make it onside. So I mean, it is a slightly controversial one, but. Let's be honest, we deserve to be 2-0 down. There's no getting away from that fact. Yeah. We were very fortunate to go in at the break. You know, if it was going to be 1-0, we'd have been very, very, very fortunate. But I was praying and hoping that we could have defended that free kick a bit better and got in at half time. And like you said, Al, just changed it. Just done something completely different in the second half, whether that be go to a back three, whether that be bring on another midfielder, whether that be take off Jesus, bring on Trossard. Because at least at 1-0, City, yeah, I still didn't fancy them to give up a 1-0 lead, but at least you're in with a chance of something happening. I think they showed a stat on the TV that when they score first, they win, you know, the majority of their games. But forget that for a minute. Anything can happen in football. And like you mentioned earlier, Al, if you've got a big physical presence up top, then it just creates carnage. And Brentford are a perfect example of that when they went to the Etihad. And just look at how well Ivan Toney played and how instrumental he was in Brentford getting that win. Now, we haven't got someone like that. We've not got a physical presence up top. I mean, Jesus is great. And when he's got the ball and when he can do his little bits of magic, he's fantastic. But you've only got to look at the player that they've got as their number nine and why they ultimately replaced Jesus. Because just look at their first goal. He takes it on his chest, pins holding, simple ball to De Bruyne. 1-0. And that's what we were trying to do with Jesus at times, but he just hasn't got the physical presence of someone like Erling Haaland to hold the ball up and play other people in. So as crazy as it sounds, I actually think we've got to potentially look at a more physical presence up top in the summer because Nketiah isn't that guy. We've got Balogun coming back. I'm not sure he's got the physical prowess to do that sort of role if he even wants to stay at Arsenal. Trossard is a totally different kettle of fish to those guys, but again, he's not got that physical side to his game. So yeah, I would have loved us to have got in at halftime 1-0 and tried something different. But the fact of the matter was at 2-0, I don't want to sound defeatist, but at 2-0, I was very much of the opinion that, you know, game, set, a match, go out there in the second half and play your best and don't let this become a rout. But yeah, I'm sure we'll get onto the second half next.
I want to bring this up, actually. So welcome to the show, Pac-Man. I know you're a City fan. Everybody's welcome. We should have had a pen in the second minute. What about that? None of it matters in the end. Pac-Man, we should have had a penalty when Haaland handballed it. So it evens itself out. And when you're your own club fan, you're always a little bit biased anyway. However, I did think that was a penalty. And I thought he was going to give a penalty. Me and Carl still argue about it now. You know, he was like, that's not a penalty. So Al, do you remember the decision I'm talking about?
Yeah, is it where the player stumbles? Go on, explain which players were involved, because I don't think I do.
Isn't it Partey? Someone in the chat.
Partey and De Bruyne. It was when, De Bruyne kind of kicks his foot into Partey.
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
Hold on, but De Bruyne kicks his foot, but didn't Partey kick him first?
No. Partey goes in, protects the ball, then De Bruyne kicks him. It's just clever defending. There's no way a penalty, there's no way that's given.
Do you think the penalty that Haaland did with his arm, though? Do you think that
Yes,
was?
I do, because the rule is underneath the armpit.
Yeah, he sort of went like that, didn't he?
Yeah, he uses the muscle part or the bicep part of his arm to get the ball out of the way. I've seen the shot. It's well below the armpit. That counts as handball. And he goes for it and he deflects the ball. But
look at this. KDB went for a shot. Partey didn't get anywhere near the ball. Don't even try it. It's funny when you see through your rose tinted, through your own car.
I don't do that.
Nor do I.
You know what? I sit in the stadium quite often and tell the people around me when they shout for Arsenal penalties, you know, don't be daft. I'm sure I piss off everyone that I sit around because, you know what fans are like, especially at the game, screaming and shouting for decisions.
Yeah.
My sort of background where I ref games as well, I'm very quick to say, listen, Partey got in, he protected the ball. He was there first. He claimed that space first and De Bruyne kicked through that space. That is not a penalty. It is a foul to us because Partey is in the space first. He's protecting the ball first. The other player kicks him. Whoever gets there first has that right of way. That's why I don't remember it, because it's such a nonsense take that it could have been a penalty. It's
I
not
thought of that second it was. There's
it
something
not,
else I want to
not a
bring
penalty
up.
At all.
Just a couple of the incidents. I thought he should have been sent off for this when he kicked out at, I don't know who it was, one of our defenders. Was there a red card when DS Ben White deliberately kicked Ben White in the leg? Yeah. Do you remember that? At the corner flag?
Yeah, swap the shirts. The Arsenal players going 100% all day.
Imagine if that was Xhaka.
We've seen it. Oh, I mean, Xhaka's read that he gets, I forget the game's home game against possibly Southampton, I forget who it was. It's about 4 or 5 seasons ago. He didn't even touch the player, but because he'd lashed out, he got sent off. And that's the rule. He lashed out. There's not a chance that if you swap the shirts, Ben White doesn't go for that. Diaz should have gone. Absolutely should have gone. But look, we are... I want to just quickly say about the offside, I'm going to give City the benefit of the doubt in that they planned for that. And it's a very, very high, high margin risk. But I actually genuinely think that Stones is running on and offside to lure Ben White into being pushed. And I just think it's really clever to get that millimetre. I'm not sure about when they actually freeze frame it. And you never can be with this. I mean, the impact of the ball, is it as it leaves? Is it as the person first touches the ball? I mean, those freeze frames will never get that right. I've seen it. I've seen it time and time again. And it gives such a margin of error. But I just think it's very clever from City to get that millimetre advantage by Stones just running backwards and forwards, on and offside. And then he notices when the ball's kicked.
Yeah.
And someone gives White a nudge and it all works out for them. And I think that's just clever tactics rather than kind of skullduggery. I actually thought Michael Oliver had a really good game up until the Diaz incident where he should have been braver and sent him off. But other than that, I actually thought he didn't let City get away with the rotational fouling. He gave us a lot of fouls that were. He got the so-called penalty incident right at the start of the game. I think Michael Oliver actually reffed it really well.
Well, funny enough, he must have done, because my city mates are complaining about him now. So they thought he was dressed in red and white.
Well, they were thinking you're not fit to referee all the way through the game. He didn't put a foot wrong. He did not put a foot wrong until, amazingly, when one of their players should have been sent off. So how they're complaining about it, I don't know. But
you know what fans are like.
No, well, I do. Some fans are. I mean, I do get the rose-tinted spectacles thing, but you can't. You can't swear black is white and white is black. I mean, Oliver didn't put a foot wrong the whole game. And that's how difficult it is to be a referee. They're singing you're not fit to referee. And all he did was not allow them get away with the kind of things they usually get away with.
Regardless of the decisions, we thoroughly deserve to lose. There is no doubt. And that we're not, for all the rival fans in this, and I can see your comments, we're not trying to justify anything here. It's a podcast that we talk about decisions, what could have happened. And we're talking about, which I'm going to just talk about with Cooks. We come out the second half and he hasn't changed it. He hasn't done anything. In your opinion, Cookie, what should he have done?
It's a tricky one. I think it was as frustrating as it was against Southampton, because when I saw Fabio Vieira coming out the tunnel again for that second half, I was equally as frustrated. At that point, at 2-0, I mean, what can you do? I suppose you kind of got to go for the jugular. And maybe I would have been inclined to take off Xhaka and bring on someone like Trossard, because Xhaka, I think you could tell, had only had that one game training. Not that I thought it was particularly poor, but again, we just needed something. And to that point where you've essentially got nothing to lose, you might as well bring someone like Trossard on. And I thought the Jorginho change was good a bit later in the game. I thought the Smith-Rowe one was bizarre, to be honest with you. I can understand why he gave him those minutes, because the game was effectively lost. But yeah, he didn't leave anything to be inspired about. And I think you can see why he's been struggling to get into the team recently. But like from the outset, I would have liked to have seen something different, something like a back three, maybe brought Tierney on. Zinchenko didn't have his best game. I mean, look, you could have wiped off every single one of those players and started the whole thing again, to be honest with you. I'm not too sure how to answer the question, because apart from bringing Trossard on and just going, you know, full throttle, which we kind of did towards the end of the game when we brought on all the attacking changes. If I knew Reece Nelson was going to be that good, as he was in his cameo, I would have brought him on a lot earlier. And I think he's well within a shout of starting the game on a Tuesday night. I don't know, to be honest. I don't want to think about it too much, to be honest. I'm just so deflated after what could have been.
I mean, come on, Carl. That's a shocking comment. He's had about 10 minutes this season. ESR was awful. I mean, come on. Can't be pointing fingers at players that are just being given token 10 minutes here and there. Either he's part of the plans or not, or we're playing him back from injury. I think it's really harsh on such a young player. That'd be like Saka being given a rest and then saying he's awful coming back. You know,
but why has he not put ESR on in any of the games? It was so strange.
Look, we know there's something going on behind the scenes there. It's been alluded to. Attitude, desire, commitment, whatever you call it, something has gone on. And Arteta is being backed to do the kind of things that he did with some more senior pros during the, I mean, what you would call the refreshing of the squad, I guess. But I don't think that's something that can be levelled at Smith Rowe. And he has gone through his own disappointments, whatever that is. And we'll probably get to know what that is. But he's not been part of a team that have been playing extremely well. That'll have its own mental impact on him. So we can't judge him on 10 minutes here and there. If he gets back in and has a decent run in the team, you know, great. If he doesn't, then I don't think it's an issue that we can level at him or say that something's gone particularly wrong. And we'll find out. I'm sure we'll find out. But I'm not going to judge him on those 10 minutes. But I think it opens a wider question as to, you know, who's really guaranteed a place? Because Reece Nelson has done nothing wrong in all the times that he's been called upon. I mean, we need to maybe look at who's guaranteed a place here and why.
Okay, so I've got a question. Should Trossard have started last night? A lot of people were calling for that, Cooks, weren't they?
well, we've not won a single game since he's come out of the side. I can understand why he didn't change it, because that front three is what we've kind of built a lot of our success on this season in terms of Saka, Jesus and Martinelli. And, you know, I think Trossard, you know, started on the bench for me in terms of my predicted lineup. So I can't grumble at the manager for doing that. But I think given the result and, you know, I feel like with that lineup yesterday, where it was so predictable, it's gone a little bit stale. And I would like to see something different going into that Chelsea game. So whether that is Trossard starts in place of Jesus, whether we give Reece Nelson a chance ahead of someone like Bukayo Saka, because I think it's a great point you make, Alan. Because, you know, I love Bukayo Saka. I love Gabriel Martinelli. But we don't want these guys to get too comfortable and to think that they're guaranteed starters in the team, because that breeds overconfidence, cockiness, arrogance, the sort of things that we've been talking about in the past couple of weeks.
One of the amazing things that you could have leveled at Arteta's management, and it's something that Unai Emery tried and he failed to implement, he failed to see it through, but he suddenly made it a meritocracy again, as in, look, you've all got a clean slate for me as players, so therefore you will be judged on everything you do, not on the past, not on how you've performed for other managers. And that only works if you stick to that. And we might have seen a kind of almost an unconscious squad reaction to, well, Trossard's been playing amazing. Look, and he's gone out the team. What's all that about? You know, his fellow squad members might have been saying, oh, well, he's gone and he's played amazingly and he's out. Reece Nelson's been good. He's not getting a look in. It breeds two things. It breeds I don't have to work that hard. I'm sure of my place. But for the others that are trying to get a place in the team, they know that the meritocracy is not quite there anymore. So it doesn't matter what they do. And he really shouldn't lose that, Arteta, because it's one of the greatest bits of his management at the club so far.
Okay. It's interesting what a lot of people are saying. It's like no one's agreeing in here tonight. It's funny. In the chat room, I'm reading it. Random 31, can we chat about Jesus also? He's moving around the pitch too much and hinders the way we attack. Trossard, Martinelli and Saka was much more fluid. Well, it wasn't, was it, until he got injured. And then he's come back and he has actually scored some goals, what, 4 in 5. I feel it's a little bit unfair on Jesus at the moment. What do you think, Kirks?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. Although he did have a bit of a stinker against Southampton. That's the only one I'd be picking out, because he had so many chances to score in that game and couldn't take them. But before that, you're quite right. He scored at Anfield. I believe he scored in one of the games against Palace or Leeds before that. I can't quite remember. And then he scored against West Ham. So he's in fine goal-scoring form. And in terms of his all-round play, he looked to be the Gabriel Jesus that was playing so brilliantly for us in August, September, October. So I don't really have an issue with him starting the game. I totally get the point about Trossard making us more fluid and that Jesus drops so deep. Trossard doesn't do that. He does do that kind of fluid side of the game, but he's always doing it in the opposition half as opposed to coming into our own half. And that's exactly why I say going into that game on Tuesday night, I don't want players to be too assured of their positions, because we've got a fantastic option in Trossard and he should start that game against Chelsea.
Okay, so let's talk about Chelsea in a moment and I'll come to you who you think you might want to start. Third goal, because it went 3-1, didn't it? And then it went 4-1. Of course, Haaland had to score.
Went 3-0.
Was it?
Huh? Yeah. 3-0.
When did Holding score then?
3-1.
Yeah, so I'm saying he went 3-0, then 3-1.
Oh, and, yeah.
And Haaland got his goal, didn't he?
I want to talk about the third goal.
But we will. By 2-0, though, I was at this stage going, please just leave it at 2-0. I'll take the loss now. I just don't want us to be absolutely humiliated. You know, the TV built this up as the title decider. And I was on BBC News that night, about 6:30 on BBC London News. They interviewed me the night before and just took one of the clips that I said. And I said, look, we've had the most incredible season. We've overachieved. We're loving our boys. We're loving everything. And we need to get back to that. We need to get back to having that, sorry, not having that love, because we have. And I know Tuesday night, the Emirates will be rocking. I do know that. But what we need is these boys have got to come out with a bit of confidence. They cannot put their heads down and worry and stress and start to fear. Now, I don't think Saka and Martinelli are getting comfortable, Cooks. I think they're worn out. I think they're shattered physically and maybe a little bit emotionally as well, a little bit mentally as well. So, Alan, talk to me about the third goal. You want to talk about that?
Well, look, it brings us nicely on to Ødegaard because we've signposted it enough. Spurs one down. Yeah, just seen that. United scored in the 7th minute, so that's good. Look, Ødegaard, he makes an awful attempt at a pass. It's so half-hearted. It's unbelievably bad. It's the kind of thing you'd go mad at a kid for doing in a Sunday league game. He has an option. He has an option to turn out to the wing. He has an option to play a more dangerous ball to the other wing. And he also has a player behind him ready to take the ball so that he can pass back and then obviously restart the attack. He goes for the pass back. It's a 20-yard to 15-yard pass. And he underhits. He just half-heartedly just... His body shape's all wrong. His attitude's all wrong. And he did the same against Southampton. Their second goal, he is favourite to win a ball and he gets shrugged off and the Southampton player wins it and plays in Walcott. That is not captain material. That is not elite captain play. That's not elite midfield play. He is of a certain level and it's certainly not the level that his fanboys think. He really isn't. And I really opposed his captaincy. He's not a captain at all. He's a lightweight. He's an absolute lightweight. You ask any Norwegian why they didn't qualify. You ask any Norwegian why they didn't qualify for Qatar. Because obviously a lot of people would have questions for Norwegians saying, hold on, you got Haaland up front, you got Ødegaard, and you had a reasonably easy group. I'll tell you why. Because Ødegaard went missing for every one of their qualifiers. No assists and no goals against some pretty ropey nations, okay? He has never, ever performed when the chips are down for Arsenal, and he never will. And,
oh, Alan, and,
well, he hasn't. Tell me where he has. Where is he?
The Give whole me one season.
Game. No, one difficult game where the pressure's been on where Ødegaard has performed. Only one. I just want one.
Sort them away.
Oh, I was just about to say that.
We know how bad they are.
No, come on, you can't say that, Al.
Listen, there was no pressure there. They've been awful all season. There was no pressure in that game. No pressure at all. They've not been playing for their bosses all season. I'm not counting Tottenham away. But even if you'd want to, you can't give me a second, so it still proves my point.
But we can give you a first and Tottenham away. He's done it the whole season.
No.
Occasionally, but
when it matters, as Mohamed says there, when it matters, he goes missing. And that is why he's at the club. Because if he wasn't that player, we wouldn't have him. And that's the harsh reality here. That is the harsh reality here. He's not captain material.
But then you've got outrageous. He's the ghost around the pitch, play silky football, not being a hard man. That's not... And look, I'm glad, Karen, you agree with me. Alan,
well,
I don't want to agree or disagree.
I want to be convinced otherwise. And no one
but
can
game after game after game, he has been fantastic.
No. He can tap it about and look good when we're 2-0 up against.
How many goals has he got, Al?
7. 4.
What, in the whole?
4 no. assists, 7 goals. I don't know which way round they are, but he's got 11 goal involvements.
Well, I have to say, people in the chat room are starting to agree with you. I don't agree.
It's not about... I'm not asking you if you agree. I'm asking you to prove me wrong. I'm asking you to convince me otherwise.
You did this about Eddie Nketiah on this show.
I'm asking you to present evidence otherwise. I'm not really saying it. It's not his first bad game in ages. He's had some shocking, shocking games. And the problem I get, and it's to do with the internet fan and the highlights reels and everything else, is... It's an insult to the Arsenal captaincy. Mesut Ozil was an insult to the Arsenal captaincy, and so is Martin Ødegaard, and they got the same initials. They're not the gritty, roll-your-sleeves-up captains that we need. They're flat-track bullies that only perform when they want to, And that will be the downfall of this season.
Wow.
Which game's clear? Which game's clear? I've asked for more than one game.
Untold games.
Where he performed against a big team. He went missing at the end of last season. He was nowhere in that Newcastle game. He was nowhere in the Tottenham game when they were good.
Right, Alan, you've had your say. You've criticised him to the hilt. Now I'm going to let Cooks come in and say what he's got to say.
Oh, God, I'm a little bit scared.
Really strongly about this because it's like a Rosicky. People used to praise Rosicky, but, you know, he'd turn up for the odd game when he fancied it.
I loved Rosicky.
Yeah, but this is it. Why?
Right, Alan.
He did not roll his sleeves up for this club or work to his best of his ability for the club. That's what I want as a fan. That's what
I will
I want
let you
fan.
Come back in, but
they're
it's
the players I love.
Cook's turn.
I mean, if you're expecting me to make a really strong argument for him, I can't really do that, to be honest with you. There are some points that you make there, Alan, that I can't disagree with. There have been games where I've looked at him and I've just thought, come on, grab this game by the scruff of the neck. Everyone was going on about that Southampton game and what a captain's performance to grab it by the scruff of the neck and get that goal. Where was he for the rest of the game? Like, come on. Like, I do totally get the argument. I also think there have been some sensational games from him, but he's got to do it in both. He's got to do it when the pressure cooker's on. But it's not just him. A lot of our players do. And I think hopefully when we get that unity around these sort of big pressurised moments, we'll see a different Martin Ødegaard. Got to remember, he's only 24. Like, there is still levels to his game that hopefully he can raise. So that's why I'm still confident in him. Regarding the captaincy thing, I mean, I don't know who else I would have given it to. He's a model professional, which, you know, I know doesn't account for absolutely everything, but I'd be keen to hear your thoughts on that, Alan. Who would you give the captaincy to?
Well, look, I'd give it back to Xhaka, but the problem that Arteta had was that I'm assuming some of the hierarchy of the club weren't quite ready to accept whether Xhaka had got the fans back on side. And that would have only been seen the first 10 games of this season. So I don't think Arteta had much choice because you would very rarely make a forward a captain because they're likely to come on and off the pitch. So, you know, looking at the front three, the wingers and Jesus, you're not going to do that because they're going to be coming off quite a bit. So you're only really looking at your players that are going to be on the pitch consistently. So you're looking at the goalkeeper, the defenders and the central midfielders most likely to last 90 minutes. So when you actually reduce the pool to those six, you're in more of a dilemma when you're Arteta, especially if one of them is going to be taken out, which is obviously Xhaka, because I believe the hierarchy at the club don't want that to be the case. And I think that he's burnt his bridges in regards to the captaincy. Look, I've been spoiled. Someone's mentioned Tony Adams there in one of the comments. Now, listen, I've been spoiled. Tony Adams followed by Patrick Vieira is, you know, it's a lovely thing to be able to have, isn't it? You know, that roll your sleeves up, get stuck in and achieve things for this football club. But Ødegaard isn't a captain. He's not captain material. Now, that's not his fault, but I still expect him to dig in and perform when the pressure's on. And there's very, very little evidence, if not no evidence whatsoever, that he performs when the pressure's on. You ask any Norwegian why they didn't qualify for Qatar, they will tell you that Ødegaard went missing in every single qualifier. Some of those against nations ranked lower than 100. He didn't score one goal. He didn't assist once. This is a guy that doesn't perform on the big stage.
Ow.
That's why Real Madrid got rid of him, and he shouldn't be our captain.
Gemini Jedi says, all the pundits and pros have said he's been instrumental. Listen to Shearer, Lineker and Redknapp.
Take my own opinions over those three all day.
Well, yeah, and you're entitled to it. But I'm entitled to disagree with you, and I do.
I don't want so-and-so says this, so-and-so
I can understand now that you... Well, it's not about facts. It's about how we feel about a certain player. We gave you facts and we said he's instrumental at Tottenham away and you went, oh, there it's easy. But we gave you that fact.
Well, that's
and
the one fact, game where we know that Tottenham haven't been performing this season. We know they haven't been performing.
But he's performed in so many other games.
Which
so
games? Many, against big teams.
But he's not the only one in the whole team that did
he's not,
not perform.
But I'm gonna call him out because people are overly praising him. And that
and I think it's deserved. But we're gonna move on. Someone's gone. This Alan fella is mental. Love it. He's actually a good friend of mine, but we do disagree. Okay. So where are we? The third goal, you had that chat about Ødegaard, the fourth goal. So Rob Holding scores, which is bizarre anyway. Quite
what
nice
was the
goal.
Winkle about this?
I don't know, really, because you're 3-1 down and you're just about to really...
It's not exactly proving anyone wrong, is it?
No we are sort of on the way to becoming... We enjoy being top of the league because I think this is the last few days we will be. I'm sure if City are playing the weekend, then that's that.
Fulham away on Sunday.
Yeah, and we play Tuesday. So enjoy it up to Sunday afternoon. That's all I'm going to say at the moment. And I've enjoyed every single moment apart from last night and maybe the Liverpool game. Cooks. So then Haaland gets his goal. It's 4-1. I mean, I felt it was over at 1-0 anyway. How did you feel at the end? What was your... Talk to me about how you felt.
When that fourth goal went in, I felt embarrassed, if I'm being honest with you. And that's just because of the fact that a minute before Haaland had let his hair down and you just knew as soon as he did that exactly what was going to happen. And then it's just such a simple goal they scored. Just Foden, pass between our two centre-halves, and there Haaland is. Like, it couldn't have been any easier. It's like we wanted that head and shoulders advert for him. And he goes off, hair flowing in the wind. It's just couldn't make it up. Head and shoulders, Haaland, beautiful stuff. It's the sort of thing that if you're a City fan, you would absolutely love. I would love one of our players to do something like that. But yeah, it's just rubbing salt into the wounds as an Arsenal supporter. And yeah, I felt very, very dejected after the game. But again, like... That was because, like I said, right at the start of this podcast, I saw this coming and I wanted to see something different. I didn't like how predictable it was. I didn't like that despite the fact... Okay, I've spoke about Rob Holding a lot. I'm not going to talk about him as an individual anymore. But we had 10 of our first choice 11 starting this game. And granted, we wanted to see something different, but that is the team that we have built so much success on this season. I didn't see an Arsenal performance from 10 of those players at all. None of them stood out to me. You know, even my beloved Bukayo Saka was nowhere to be seen. Martinelli was nowhere to be seen. And granted, we couldn't get the ball high enough up the pitch to them, but you saw a real gulf between the sides. And I mean, this was spoken about as a title decider, and it was nothing like that. I mean, it was City's easiest game of the season at home. I truly do believe that. It was so easy for them. They've beaten us something like 12 times on the spin now. It's our worst losing record to any team. I hate playing them. I hate playing Guardiola. I hate playing De Bruyne because you just know what is coming. And the frustrating thing is we gave him the game at the Emirates. Like, even though we had Partey out, we should have done better in that game. We should have got something from it. And they were if you remember, Edison was time-wasting in that game.
Yeah.
And they were fearful of us. But in this game, it was totally different. It was just men against boys. We looked like absolutely scared children out there, rabbits in the headlights. And, you know, I know this is a ridiculous comparison, but when you look back to the Champions League final in 06, when we were coming up against that fearless Barcelona side that were absolutely phenomenal. And I would say, you know, we weren't as good as the 03-04 team when we went in there in 2006, but we played so much better. And we were playing a large spell of that game with 10 men. And we put in so much more of a fight in that game than we did in the game last night. And that's the most frustrating thing about it for me, because it's not just a technical thing. It's partly a technical, partly a tactical thing. Okay, they're a better team. I can accept that they're the best team in the world, but it's still a mentality thing. Like, it's still up there. Like, we've still got to go to places like City and show that we are Arsenal. We are who we want to be. And we didn't show that yesterday. I was really frustrated about that, especially when we've gone to places like Spurs and we've got that hoodoo out of the way, when we should have gone to United and won that game comfortably, where we've overcome so many hurdles this season. Then it's the one that counts. You know, you really want this league. You really want to go out there and be champions. You want to start a legacy. This is the game you do it in. And they just completely fell away. And you can't tell me that's because Rob Holding is playing. You know, he is dead. No, go on, mate.
Cookie, do you think... I mean, we're rewinding it a little bit. Do you think he should foul Haaland on that first goal?
We should foul them all on every goal.
I just think I think he should take a foul. I think he should take one for the team there.
Well, I think he's pushed too high up the pitch anyway.
That's it. But he knows that. So, I mean, just assessing where the ball is, where Haaland is, and the fact that if he does get beat,
but this is the thing, Alan. I think you should have gone into the back of him. But what you're suggesting is a very intelligent thing to say. Rob Holding is not an intelligent footballer. Like, with all due respect, he's a lovely guy. If he was playing an Everton shirt, we'd be giving him England shouts. But the fact is, at this level, he's not cut out for it.
Saliba, yeah. As what Fiona said, getting injured it affected us so much. Guys, we're at over an hour and I just want to touch on Chelsea. We're all disappointed. We're all upset. I gather we all think, does anyone in the chat room think that we could win the league? I don't, but football is a funny old game. I do believe it's City's now. I think everyone feels outside of Arsenal, it's City's. Cooks and Al, I think, do you think it's gone? Yes or no?
Look, I mean, the odds reflect a 9% chance. We've got a 9% chance. There still is a chance. I mean, at the start of the season, it was quoted as a 2% chance. So, look, we're still in a net positive position from what the price we started at the start of the season.
Yes or no, Al?
Look, if anyone said to me, you could take going into the end of April, the first game in May, with a 10% chance of winning the league, that's great. If they then caveat it by saying, yes, but at one point you did have a 70% chance, that is okay. The concerning thing.
I know.
Can we win it? Someone is going to have to perform miracles against City when they don't need to. That's just purely it. There's going to be a lot of mid-table
things. Such a politician's answer. I love it.
But no, I think, you know, Fulham have got nothing to play for. I saw them play against West Ham 2 weeks ago. They could have played for 2 months and wouldn't have scored.
Yeah.
The Mitrovic absence is really affecting them. A mid-table team or two are going to have to do something with a lot of freedom and just be really lucky. But my fear is that we will lose against Chelsea and Newcastle.
Well, let's back up again.
Without changes.
Right. Cooks, do you think it's gone?
Yeah, I do, sadly. And, you know, I think... like you say, Alan, there are so many teams that City have got to come up against that I just expect them to beat. They could draw their two games in hand and they'll still win this league. And that's even if we win every single game. City may drop points. We're going to drop points. Like that's an absolute fact. I don't believe we'll go to Newcastle away unless Saliba is back, which I don't think he will be. I don't think we go to these grounds and win. But, you know, I'm going to say I'm not going to go on an absolute negative because we have secured Champions League football. This is a team that will only get
better. That's not my question.
No, it's not. It's not Amanda, but I need to caveat that because we're talking so much about the title. I'm frustrated that we're ending this season trophyless because we should be ending it with silverware. This team is good enough to win silverware. If we'd have got top four and we had an FA Cup and we had a Europa League to show for it, brilliant, remarkable, unbelievable season. I'd be so happy with that. And then we go for the league next year. But the fact of the matter is, we're finishing in the top four. We're way ahead of where everyone thinks we're going to be. Yep, we've got rival fans saying stuff like, oh, you know, Arsenal have got to win it this season or they're never going to do it. What absolute tosh. This team, the nucleus of this team is under 24. You know, they're only saying that because they want to will that into existence. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry, United, Liverpool, Spurs, Chelsea fans. This team is here to stay. We're going to be here next season. We're in the Champions League. We're going to strengthen in the summer. Granted, those around us will as well. But this team is on the up. It will only get better. I promise you that.
We were going to get into that now. I just wanted to know if you thought we were going to, if there was a chance. I think it's gone. I think it's City's and I don't need to say anything else. Football is a funny old game, but I can see us dropping points and I can't see them dropping. But I just want to ask you this. This is relating, okay, to our upcoming game with Chelsea. Just give me a minute each on do you expect, this is from Phil Macker. Thank you for your question. Do you expect us to be able to reverse our form immediately? And if so, how, if Arteta sends out the same 11? Al, you got a minute.
I think the Chelsea game is really interesting. I think it's one goal in seven, one draw in seven games. I mean, that we know they're abysmal. Frank Lampard is not a good manager. He's taking care of a mishmash squad that is so unbalanced. The problem I have with Chelsea is that I think they've reached rock bottom with that Brentford result. And I actually firmly believe they have absolutely nothing to lose next Tuesday. And for that reason, I actually think it's far worse to go and take them on, because Lampard doesn't have to do much. He's going to put 11 players on the pitch that are all world class or just below that. And they won't have to be motivated to go and perform in that game, because it is a, you know, it's a game against the side that hopefully is still top of the league, or certainly in the top two positions in the league. So Lampard is actually taken out of the equation here. As long as he puts 11 players on the pitch that are of reasonable quality, and we know they've got quality, if Arteta does not change things, we're in trouble. And I would freshen it up to the extent where I would... I think he's got to go for it. I really do think he's got to go for it. I would get Nelson in. I would get Trossard in to start. I would possibly play Jorginho. He's got a lot to play for. Is he on loan? So he can't play.
No, we've got him. He's ours.
Right, okay. So he can play. No, I would bring in everyone. I would genuinely mix it up so that they don't know what they're looking at, and there's a lot more desire in our ranks. I would rip it up for that game.
Cooks.
Yeah. I don't know if I've got the same sort of worries about Chelsea. I think I look at a lot of their players, and you know, take Lampard out of the equation, but I don't see a lot of motivated players. Like Kovacic, absolute garbage this season. Enzo Fernandez is kind of out there, one shining light, but even he's not really stood out amongst that absolute mess. The one player I'm obviously worried about is Mudryk coming on and scoring. But there's no one in that team that particularly fills me with worry. I look at their forward line, and you know, Havertz, bang average. We've lost Alan. That's a shame.
Alan's gone.
He's got. You know, he's.
I'll bring him back in if he comes. Okay. Do you think I'm not worried about Chelsea, but then I wasn't worried about Southampton. So do you think that he's back? Do you think that I don't know with Arteta anymore, Cooks, whether he'll change it up or not, but do you think we'll win?
I'll be gutted if we don't. And I don't want it to be a rubbish win either. I don't want us to scrape by and hardly create any chances or hardly have any shots. And so I want this to be an absolute battering. I want us to really go for it, because they are awful. Genuinely, they are awful. If we don't come to this game and win, you know, 2-3, 3-0, I'd love us to win this game 5-0. I'm not even thinking about the title. I just really want to put a convincing win past Chelsea, because of all people, I saw them piping up yesterday. And I'm like, who on earth are you to be talking at the minute? Because you've spent 600 odd million and you've got nothing to show for it. So I agree with Alan. I would like to bring Trossard. I'd like to bring Nelson in. And I would like us to try something different in defence, because we can't continue like this with Rob Holding. And I think we've got licence to do it, because Chelsea's attack is so woeful that we can, you know, not be fearful of conceding loads of chances, loads of shots on goal. So, yeah, something different in defence, and Trossard and Nelson in the team. And I think we win this game.
Boys, it's been an absolute brilliant show. We've got an hour and 15 minutes. I just want to bring in the fact that, can everyone wish my dad a happy birthday for Monday? He's going to be 77. Someone called him King Goonie yesterday, but he is my lovely dad, and he's not been so well this week. So, Dad, happy birthday for Monday. I know all you want is to beat Chelsea on Tuesday night. He's absolutely obsessed with the Arsenal. So happy birthday, Dad. Love you. Guys and girls, thank you so much for joining us on our Sunday night pod on a Thursday evening. We've argued about Ødegaard. We've discussed VAR. We're all disappointed. But I would like to just leave the podcast saying, yes, I'm going to put some birthdays up for my dad. I would like to leave the podcast saying how wonderful this season has been. I've loved every moment. I told you all to enjoy the ride, because God knows when we knew it was going to be over. It's not over. We've still got 5 games to play. Anything can happen. I'm just absolutely so proud of them. They've fallen a bit short in April. It happens. Everyone goes on a bad run. But you know what? Let's get behind them Tuesday night. I know I'm not going to have to request that. I'm assuming Al and James, are you both going? Yeah, Alan James, sorry. You both go him?
Yeah, be there.
Yeah. And I just think you never know. Football is a funny old game. We could be sitting here, Fulham could beat City for mad reasons. We could end up being Chelsea. And it all starts all over again. Thank you for all these wonderful messages.
Can we cope with getting close again and then having it taken away?
Listen. I'll tell you something.
I've made my peace with it.
I will take going to Wolves having to win it if that we even had that chance back, because after last night, I don't think so. But you never know. It's a funny old game. So, everybody, we are back Sunday week after Newcastle. I don't even want to discuss Newcastle because I can't get into that with Cooks, because it'll be half an hour discussing St James's Park with my co-host about how much he's so nervous about getting a battering against the Barcoders. But we'll be back post-game on the Sunday evening. Listen, everyone, it's been disappointing, but what a bloody brilliant season. And it's not over. It's not over yet. So thank you, everyone. Please press like on the way out. Please press subscribe. We really appreciate all your comments and questions. This podcast is live and interactive, and we're always going to keep it like that. Alan Algar, I've loved you. Thank you for coming on the show, young man.
Pleasure.
Love you, even though we disagree on loads. It's great. Who cares? That's the beauty of football. James, as ever, thank you, my lovely. But to everybody listening on audio who haven't seen us, it is always Arsenal, always Arsenal. Good night, everyone.
Sports Social Podcast Network.